I'm Robert Brown with the Cognizant Center for the Future of Work. For those of you that, how many of you are familiar with Cognizant? Show of hands? Okay, everybody's familiar. Okay, that's good. I've been with the firm now for about 5.5 years. The Center for the Future of Work is attached to our corporate strategy function within Cognizant. And I was previously an analyst at Gartner for about 15 years. I was managing vice president of the business and application services research team. So joined Cognizant about 4 years ago. We take a very specific lens on the future of work. And I want to share with you today what we're calling the second half of the chessboard, which is brand new research from 350 senior executives in the media and entertainment space to sort of get a sense of what's going on out in the industry relative to technology, the future of business process, and specifically the future of work. And then I'd like to, in the second half of the chessboard presentation, take you through our future of work scenario with where we see media and entertainment going. And I'll try and leave some time for questions at the end. So without further ado, we will start with a video. This is the old function F7 leap of faith. It was working in the dress rehearsal.
Yes. 1 second.
Ah, I think I hit the. I think it was operator error. It was a future of work problem from the future of work guy.
This is the video.
Yeah, it's an embedded video. Mm. If we can't get it to work, that's okay.
I don't know if the file came over with it.
It did. It's embedded in there, but that's okay.
This one always gets.
Robert's talking about YouTube.
No, it's embedded. Yeah.
Where is it? Oh, we could.
That's okay.
Okay.
That's okay. Thanks.
Sorry about that.
It's on Twitter. If you guys are on Twitter, go check it out on Twitter. We want to be able to. Talk to you about this study and effectively. We're going to do a take two.
Can you go back to that slide? Because I noticed on the screen we had some different options. How'd you get over there?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
let's try that.
Right on. Magically.
It's still nothing.
Still nothing.
Sorry, we tried.
That's okay. All right, so the work ahead. Our point of view on this is that fundamentally, everybody in this room, whether you work for a film studio, whether you work for a gaming company, whether you work for TV, film, even media companies, your work ahead is being able to connect old processes to new technologies. And we see these competitive moves are happening everywhere. Just a couple of examples. It is incredible now to think that the old gray lady, the New York Times herself, is now pulling in half of its revenues, estimated to be about $500 million through the paywall. Okay, this is an area where data wants to be free, and heaven help anybody that gets in the way of monetizing that. I think the Cloverfield Paradox anecdote, where Netflix dropped that with no warning during the Super Bowl, to rapturous receptions from fans, is emblematic of what a lot of the people on the main stage were talking about this morning. What does that do to the marketing budget? What does that do to the supply chain of getting that content awareness, the pre-release? It absolutely disrupts the business processes of the company. And then just to give a European example, Argent Media launched the New European magazine within 10 days following the Brexit vote. So the speed with which these things are happening is absolutely incredible. So let's get into the research for a moment. I'm going to call this a tale of shock and dough, to channel my inner Homer Simpson. It's shocking because of this admission that more than 95% of media and entertainment companies would not characterize themselves as being digital leaders. This in the year 2018, right? 3% of those 350 that we interviewed think that they're digital leaders. And we know from everything that we've already heard today, and you guys see this in your business every day, being a digital leader is going to be critical. Now, the good news is that 45% think that they're maturing, but there's almost a digital delusion at play, which is by 2022, 47%, almost half of them think that, yeah, we're going to be able to catapult ourselves through magic and pixie dust to become true digital leaders. And so that is a rather shocking admission that does need urgent action. The spending profile was also very, very interesting to look at. There's a 50% expected increase in spending on new technology over the next 5 years. So The average was 10% of annual revenues today being spent on technology to 15% by the year 2022. So the money is going to be a big lever that drives this. Just to get into some of the, I don't know if you guys in the back can see the differential between the green bit and the blue bit, but this shows where spending is occurring. And you see these sort of big spikes that mobile, clearly the future of work and the future of business strategy runs right through mobility technology. Wearables are a part of the equation, AI for sure. This one is sort of a bit of an unknown at this point. I think people are hedging, right? And blockchain too. AR and VR is sort of, you know, it's sort of equidistant with wearables and AI today in terms of impact. But the 2020 impact remains to be seen. I think that's a longer term play. I want to talk a little bit of more about what we see that impact looking like in the future of work in a moment. What about the forces outside of where we sit right now? Today you work for a movie studio or a network. Tomorrow does your employer in the future of work become a telco? Is it a Silicon Valley company? Is it Aaron Levy at Box? Is it Google? A company in China perhaps? The Alibaba announcement last year, they created not a $1.5. This is so funny. The Fortune tweet, or the tweet from Fortune that I retweeted, is a $1.5 project fund. It's $1.5 billion war chest for investment. You guys have seen the quote, perhaps, from Marc Andreessen that software is eating the world. Again, you know, you look at just the discussion of file sharing going from golf carts and faxes earlier today. And in an industry, we've seen the merger and acquisition activity happening over and over. Your middle and back office processes probably look like this. And to be a true digital leader, to gain and exceed in the sweepstakes that we've been talking about, competitive pressure demands you take that kludge of middle and back office systems that probably don't interoperate very well today and crunch them down into something that, if you look at the digital natives like Uber, like Netflix, like Apple, like Amazon, they are flat as a pancake in the middle and back office processes of their companies. And by the way, I was the chief strategy officer for Cognizant Digital Operations for my first 3 years at the company, in addition to my work at the Center for the Future of Work. And this is a huge part of what we do as a firm at Cognizant. And so I don't want to drain this slide, but effectively our entire corporate strategy within Cognizant Digital Operations is all about how do you crush in a good way, those middle and back office processes closer to the digital front office to get closer to customers. And that's a big challenge for the industry today. The other part of this thing is when we talk about the future of work, talent is not going away, but incumbent upon people in this room is how do you stop the bleed? There's just some anecdotes looking at the advertising space. WPP lost more than 2,000 employees to these two giants, and there's relatively few flowing back the other way. So that's also emblematic of some of the forces that are in play here. But let's think about work. Let's think about work for a minute. Look at this workspace. Do we see pretty quickly, we talked a little bit in the morning sessions about how workforce is distributing all over the world. That's no surprise to you guys. That's been happening for a while. But look at this workspace. This is kind of the land of the time forgot. And when we talk to technologists, this is a great quote from Mary Meeker of Kleiner Perkins. Actually, she left Kleiner Perkins about 3 weeks ago to start her own firm. But I love her quote. We're in an era where we're reimagining nearly everything powered by new devices, plus connectivity, plus new user interfaces, plus beauty. And for technologists, sometimes that discussion of beauty can be a very uncomfortable conversation, right? You know, technologists, sort of like network tool belt wars and speeds and feeds, but the notion of beauty sometimes is an unusual conversation. So when I look at this, I see a beautiful product. When I was an analyst at Gartner in 2007, when Steve Jobs announced this, I'll never forget, I was down in Australia at an event, and I asked the telco analysts that I was with in Sydney, I said, is this thing a real game changer? Is this a disruptor? And they said, absolutely. It's totally a disruptor. Believe the hype. So beauty begets beauty, right? That beautiful device that Johnny Ive had a huge hand in designing extremely ergonomically led to a beautiful retail experience. And it's ironic that this is the Apple Store inside of Grand Central Station, which is totally emblematic of the first industrial revolution with the trains going in and out. It's a beautiful experience. And then that success begat this. My first job in Silicon Valley when I graduated from college in 1995 was at Hewlett Packard. In Cupertino, those HP facilities are now lying underneath the Apple spaceship. So the strategy of these firms rolls on and on. And that is, you know, you may quibble. I think that's kind of beautiful architecture. But beauty also begets beauty like this. And so you can look at the trend line of Apple, right? First company to do what over the summer? Reach $1 trillion, right? And Amazon right in its wake. So that's a beautiful trend line if you're a financial analyst. But the future of work is unevenly distributed. It's here today. Beauty is also very unevenly distributed. You can look at interfaces like this inside of the middle and back office processes and say, is that a beautiful experience? How do we get that work much more integrated and much more aligned? And some of the digital solutions that we talked about today are starting to bridge that gap. But there's opportunity for that everywhere across the organization. So how do you become a digital sprinter? So back to our research, we asked about process, culture, strategy, talent, customer centricity, product innovation, and staying ahead. The sprinters are staying ahead of the pack by investing in their process, right? That may seem like kind of an unsexy pursuit, but unlocking the potential in the middle and back office processes to get closer to the customer is absolutely an unavoidable route for businesses in this industry. It's absolutely unavoidable. But let's walk back to 2011 for a second, right? Dateline 2011. The adventures of Netflix in Quickster was not that long ago. If you remember, Reed Hastings, I mean, he had to stand up and basically take, you know, proverbial bullet for the company. We screwed up. And in fact, does anybody remember there was like, you know, Saturday Night Live skits? Go on YouTube and look at the skit for Quickster. It is so damn funny. And you think about, you know, if you do this one pivot at a time strategically, great things can happen. And so we can sort of totemically hold up Netflix as a great example of what can go right. But things went wrong for them not that long ago, right? And the moving parts of CDs and so forth, you guys know the story. But when we see something like this, Netflix to drop 700 original projects in the year 2018, we're now dateline 2018, with that kind of a patron, you know, why would you work anywhere else? And so that is emblematic of our times. Okay, so what could possibly go wrong with the scenario? So far, so good, right? Lots of money to be made, but things like this, okay? In the wake of concerns about privacy, Cambridge Analytica, Mr. Zuckerberg had to go to Capitol Hill, have a colonoscopy in front of congresspeople. Okay, so bottom line is ethics and self-control as we go down the second half of this chessboard. It has to be hard-coded. I'm actually really encouraged that I was at USC last night speaking to the MBA students at the Marshall School. USC has endowed professors of ethics in the vernacular of augmented reality and virtual reality, which is really, really cool. It's really needed because the alternative to this, as we can keep going down the road, an absence of trust is going to lead to antitrust. And so up where I live in Silicon Valley, you're already starting to see some of the engines rolling around this. And so that's really, really important to take into account of. You have professors like, I don't know if any of you know Scott Galloway, who's at NYU Stern, author of The Four, great book. This is him in a goofy Braveheart outfit. I don't know why, but he says, we must break up big tech. And so strategically, as we look out into the 2020s, we all know the tale of big tobacco, big fat, big soda is big tech next. And media and entertainment is the clean, bright lines in this industry are converging all the time. So we need to be aware of that as well. So distribution or content for this industry. In our report, please read it, we talk about content. Content is king. Disney bets the mouse, they're betting the mouse house. Their acquisition of BAMTech, just to give like one sort of through a cardboard tube anecdote in this space, is a pillar of its experience strategy. We're gonna talk a little bit more about them in a second. It's as sophisticated as Netflix, but it's differentiated. Their content is king, but distribution pays the bills. I don't know if any of you have read Creativity, Inc. by Ed Catmull. Show of hands, anybody read that? It's a great book about media and entertainment, but hands down, it's one of the best books I've ever read about business, period. And he talks about the dichotomy of what he calls the baby and the beast, right? The baby is the beautiful experience they're driving through their content, but the beast is feeding the beast of shareholder expectations for Disney as a franchise. But what's cool about this on the long game, and I want to tie it back to what Galloway said, Disney is sort of engineering a foundation for multi-generational cradle-to-grave relationships in an area where, in an era where trust is feeling a little bit more evanescent with each passing day. Disney has cultivated a sense of a family-friendly, trusted brand. And so when you look at the absolute pervasiveness of companies like Amazon and how they're wending their way into different aspects of our lives, could Disney effectively start to capture those types of moments in the long game? Could they diversify into things like health and wellness, for example? Could they diversify into other sectors that we haven't even thought of yet? And that's where the future of work from a strategy perspective starts to get very interesting. So in fact, we wrote a book about it called What to Do When Machines Do Everything. Just a little humble brag here. It was Amazon's number two best-selling leadership book of 2017. And we talked about our AHEAD model, which is the stepstone path that you need to get from now to the future. And what's kind of fun about this, I'll just, in the interest of time, I want to talk about the last one here, which is discovery. The discovery of new vectors of strategy and diversification, and that has a direct impact on the future of work. So let me give you an example. 15 years ago, who could have imagined the following help wanted ad? Okay, Twitter didn't exist 15 years ago. But if I told you 15 years ago that the number one in-demand most important job in the modern marketing function is the social media manager, the Twitter data wrangler, you would have looked at me like I was nuts. But here we are. And so you start to see examples like this popping up all over the place. So imagine the Lumiere brothers for a moment in the 19th century when they invented cinema. Could they have imagined the franchise of Iron Man today? And more importantly, the 6 million direct jobs and many millions more around the world in the film business, not just here in Hollywood, right? We talked a little bit this morning about what's going on in Bollywood. Cinecittà, you know, is much smaller in Italy, Pinewood Studios in England, but you know, things like Weta Workshop down in New Zealand, super cool. There's a blast radius, and I mean that in a good way, of a halo of jobs that's being created around these new technologies. The irony is, like, you know, now that you have platforms and robots, there's this pervasive sense in academic circles that the future of work is under immense threat. Because once you answer this question, what do you, you know, the title of the book is a question, what do you do when machines do everything? The next logical question is, okay, what exactly are all of those jobs that you guys predict are going to happen in the future? So we followed up with this, 21 jobs of the future, and it is literally as if an HR department in the year 2028 sent down the job description for jobs that don't exist today. So I'm not going to drain that part of the slide. Please take a look at it. But there is something that's really important about this, that it all traversed three common themes of coaching, connecting, and caring. And humans, if you believe Barbara Streisand, who said that people who need people are the luckiest people in the world. Funny girl? Anybody remember that one? Anyway. These are all about people-centric skills. They're not going away. And so I want to give you one example, the augmented reality journey builder. And so imagining the possibilities of that. It's more than going to be, you know, sort of goofy actors in mocap suits wearing ping pong balls. This is going to be, like a century ago, we had bricklayers that built out the infrastructure of the industrial cities of the world. And in order to make this work, you guys in this room probably know some of the deep technologies around this a bit better than I do, but you're going to need to have data over layers that skin every vector and every angle of the world to make this pan out. If you haven't been to Augmented World Expo up in Santa Clara, it is absolutely mind-blowing, some of the technologies that are coming online to do this. So just one example, NVIDIA, we think of them as being a chips maker for gaming. They have released their in-painting tool, so you can do things like giving, you know, good old Ernest Borgnine a makeover. The examples are everywhere. ABBA hasn't made new music since the 1980s. They're doing so for the first time, but they are doing so with avatars. New music and a tour. Their manager said, we should definitely not have them go out on stage. They, you know, they are in their 70s. They made music in the 70s. They are in their 70s. We should listen to how they sing today, but the visage will be ABBA as they appeared in the 1970s. Does anybody remember when Tupac Shakur was posthumously cropped up on stage at Coachella a few years ago? this is sort of what we're seeing. If anybody saw the farewell Yellow Brick Road tour announcement that Sir Elton put out earlier this year in virtual reality, it is awesome. And the case study about how they did that with AR Journey Builders is super, super cool stuff. So you can look at what your kids are doing, maybe even yourself, and say, okay, you know, why wouldn't I want my face on a taco? This is the Taco Bell Cinco de Mayo lens. But if you observe young people, it's almost like a generational lingua franca that they have around the world. It's how they communicate. And so you start to see these glimmers in 2018. When this came out a couple of years ago, you might have thought this is a joke, okay? When I worked at Gartner in the late 90s and we started talking about cloud computing, people thought that cloud computing was a joke 20 years ago, all right? You know, my mission critical apps in the cloud, not gonna happen. And if you've been up to San Francisco lately and have seen the Salesforce Tower and look at what strategic thinking premised on cloud infrastructure looks like, that's pretty emblematic of where we stand right now. I want to talk about the games engines for just a moment. Okay, this, I don't know if you guys know this guy, John Riccitiello. He's the CEO of Unity, right? These are the big back-end engines that drive massively MMORPG games. Their big competitor is the Epic Unreal Engine, which is the backbone for Fortnite, which many of your kids may be playing. My son is 14 and totally addicted to it. What's really cool about this is that he says, we call it a game engine, but really it's an animation, interactive, lighting, physics, presence engine, and it also happens to be what Audi needs, and it happens to be what the guys at the Large Hadron Collider at CERN also need, where you have massive compute requirements for these beautifully rendered in-game experiences. So you can look at sort of a vector like that into building out some of these experiential, immersive avenues to get closer to customers. So when you start to get into the second half of the chessboard, what comes after the entertainment economy? We didn't coin this term, others have, but it's time to get ready for the experience economy. What's this?
Airbnb.
Okay, so we think of Airbnb as being a substitute for hotel space. Give you a place to rest your head at night. Brian Chesky, the CEO of Airbnb, is personally stewarding, shepherding, and driving their Airbnb experience strategy. And it's very cool. And effectively, the strategy, how do you get people, when they're in place, to be immersed in experiences? So you start to overlay the AR-VR potentials into this. And like, I love Bruce Springsteen, and I've always wondered, you know, what would it be like to be on stage at the Garden in New York City with the E Street Band next to me and the Boss standing next to me? I also love wine, and I've always wondered, what would it be like to be a French vineyard owner? You know, I love Peter Mayle books, so what would that experience be like? And if you're a student, what would it be like to chat with Captain Scott in his hut in Antarctica a century ago? So sublime experiences, beautiful experiences, are sort of lying in wait down this path. You start to do other mashups. What if Tesla, instead of Niantic, what if Tesla had invented Pokemon Go? And I love Star Wars. If you could almost like Pandora music station, switch on a skin, which is I'm in commute traffic and I want to drop into the trench on the Death Star. What would that be like? And by the way, imagine if they did it in partnership with Waze at Google and unpicked the Gordian knot of commute hour traffic as a part of that experience. So we think that AR Journey Builders is just one example of 21 jobs of the future, or will sort of be experience conductors. They're going to be essential to building this out. So I encourage you to check out the report, how we've set that up. Wait for it, just a little teaser, we're going to be releasing 21 more jobs of the future in 3 weeks, and also releasing the Cognizant Jobs of the Future Index, which will look like the Dow Jones Industrial Average, so we can actually track how this stuff is manifesting and coming to pass over time. The composers of this stuff, from a creative aspect, you guys see this in Hollywood all the time, but they're everywhere. They're around the world. So this is the Airbnb experience model. Up where I live in San Francisco, with Carney, the Castro Queen, Topolicious is in Barcelona. James, If These Walls Could Talk, doing graffiti street art immersion. And so this is all very tangible, and we're starting to see the industry really drive into deep creativity. And these technologies will unlock that capability. So I'm going to kind of bring it home now. What happens when we're more Bach than Bach? This is the Magenta platform from Google. It actually generates and creates music. And there's a very insightful quote from Brian Eno. If anybody saw my presentation last year here at HITS, I still think this is so relevant. He says, whatever you find weird, uncomfortable, nasty, ugly about a new medium will surely become its signature. CD distortion, the jitteriness of digital video, the crap sound of 8-bit, the distorted guitar sound is the sound of something too loud for the medium supposed to carry it. The excitement of grainy film, of bleached out black and white, is the excitement of witnessing events too momentous for the medium assigned to record them. So if you think this is never going to happen, you know, the HoloLens is like a 2-pound goofy thing that you wear on your head with a wire and the battery only lasts for, you know, like an hour. This is coming. This is coming. There's just a matter of time. And so I think this quote is very instructive to think about how the future may play out. So get ready for the experience economy. It's going to be part and parcel of the second half of the chessboard for this industry and how this industry starts to blend and morph into the games industry, into the technology industry, into the content distribution industry. And you may say, okay, I'll buy that. What comes after, what comes after the after as we get further down into the second half of the chessboard? Well, like a good book, it's sort of, it's turtles all the way down. If you know that parable, it's like, well, you know, what does the earth sit on? Well, it's on the back of an enormous turtle. Well, what's underneath the turtle? Another turtle. Well, what's underneath that? Another turtle. Well, it's turtles all the way down. All of our stuff is on futureofwork.com. We own that domain name. It's part of Cognizant. And this was published by my colleague Ben Pring a week before last, The Future of Reality. And it's really, really insightful as we get into things like the future of filters. We get into things like the trust variables that we talked about and making sure that we aren't living in a world of anti-trust. And so things like fake news, right? It's turtles all the way down. There's lots of work for all of us to do in that regard. But that's another story and shall be told another time. And with that, I'll leave you with one piece of advice and then we'll do questions. Like a good gamer, don't get caught playing checkers because, like our report says, it's time to start playing chess. And with that, I'd like to thank you guys very much.
If you have any questions, let me know. You can walk around the mic.
If you've ever wondered, what do my kids do? What's my kid going to college to do? Or yourself, your work ahead. This is what we think about all the time in the Center for the Future of Work. Does anybody have a background or somebody they know that majored in linguistics? Nobody had a friend that majored in linguistics? In college? Oh, okay, cool, thank you.
He lives in France now.
Yeah, it's interesting, like 10 years ago, like I think I should have majored in linguistics. I think languages are really cool. And like 10 years ago, it was sort of like, oh, you majored in linguistics. You know, that's nice. It's Google Translate's world and we all just live in it. And all of a sudden, the voice UX designer in a world suffused with platforms like Siri and Alexa, and there's one voice for Siri and Alexa, but there's 7 billion people on the planet. I speak English with a Northern California dialect. Theoretically, there is one perfect language that I would interact with, and suddenly, and you'll see it in the new report, companies are saying, I need like 100 linguistics majors like yesterday. So anyway, it's funny how these things have been rolled. Any other questions? Business process, technology?
Oh, I just really quick question. You know, with being able to be more mobile, can you talk a little bit about basically living wherever you want to do whatever you're doing for work and how that could really change the whole kind of face of the globe a little bit?
Yeah, I totally agree. There's you know, several vectors on that one that I would talk about. I've worked from home for the last 15 years. In fact, the last time I worked in an office was in London in 2002. And just the way that my brain works, I work very well. The Center for the Future of Work is a global team. We interact with each other all day. It works very well for me. You got to have a lot of discipline to do it. But I would say to your point, you think about things like AR journey builders, and even on the stage thing, we talked about, well, we're going to get a piece of this from here and a piece of that from there, and we're going to smush it together in Box or other platforms that will knit those pieces together and then render them out. Absolutely. I think you could look at you know, certainly the first wave of offshore outsourcing was emblematic of that. It was kind of revenge of the internet a little bit. You could kind of work, you could do the work from anywhere. But I think with Gen Z and millennials as well, just all of a sudden the burgeoning of things like hashtag van life and people that are on the move and kind of working from anywhere, earning their coin, and then able to be somewhat flexible in that lifestyle. The gig economy, there's a huge economic discussion that we could have about the economics of the gig economy. But you're seeing that take off. And so I'm betting long on the ability of people to work remote from anywhere.
Time for one more.
Yeah, how do you think about resourcing this transition?
Resource, yeah.
So you have these legacy enterprises that are constrained by investment,
yeah,
or skill set. So to really make that transition in earnest requires dollars and kind of rethinking your workforce. How, like, where do you start on that?
That's a great question. So particularly if you're a large business that has lots of those legacy systems that all need to talk to each other, right? The irony of ERP, like 20 years ago, was like, oh, we're connecting islands of information. And then you got that last mile of data integration. You probably see it in your business where it's like people doing swivel chair, you know, maybe two or three screens and patching all that together. The first step on the journey, I don't know if you've experimented at all with RPA, right? It seems like most people have gotten the memo on robotic process automation overlays. The challenge with that then is you do RPA and then you're, you know, building up a bunch of legacy scripts that have to be managed. And so again, you're sort of adding to that pile of technical debt, and then that can lead to process debt. And so that's why the future of work is really important, because you can kind of rethink, you rethink the work, you rethink the work process, you change the work process, you change the business process, you change the business process, you change the business strategy. So, by way of Cleveland, all of that is to say that organizational change management, OCM capabilities are absolutely critical to do that. Cognizant, actually based out of here in Los Angeles, has a very big OCM change management practice. And whether it's things like how do we take a 15-step process and scrape it down to 5 or 3 using RPA all the way through the biggest digital transformation initiatives that you can think of, that's what they do. It takes a very bold CEO to state in front of shareholders that legacy is poison and we're going to write off all of this captive investment that we've got. But make no mistake, the longer that companies wait to do that, it's like dragging a boat anchor it's like paying a laggard penalty to make that shift. And so you know, either do it now or you got to do it later. But it does take the first step. So funny thing about the future of work, it's always in the future, but it starts tomorrow. So with that, I want to thank you guys very, very much. I'm around. Please don't ask me questions. Thank you.